This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 7:36 in the morning. This is The Morning Run with Shazana, Chuang and Philip. We are now, though, turning our attention to a neighboring country, to Myanmar. The start of August marked 6 months since the military coup in Myanmar, which saw the ouster of National League for Democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi and the return of a junta governing body. Now, the junta has declared the results of the November 2020 elections void. That was where we saw Aung San Suu Kyi's party gain widespread victory. Initially, they said that they were committed to holding fresh elections within 1 year of taking control in February, but this plan has now changed.
Yeah, because on Sunday, the junta chief, General Min Aung Hlaing, extended the timeline for the elections to August 2023. He was also named as the caretaker prime minister. Meanwhile, ASEAN efforts to mediate the crisis have not really seen much progress, despite coming out with a five-point consensus plan in April, which included the appointment of an ASEAN special envoy who would visit Myanmar and meet with stakeholders. No envoy has been named to date.
That's right. And all this is taking place amid a worsening COVID-19 pandemic. You know, the healthcare system is further impacted because healthcare staff have also been boycotting due to the coup. So, you know, the question really is Myanmar's path to democracy irrevocably derailed? And joining us to discuss this is Aaron Connolly, research fellow at the International Institute for Strategic Studies. Aaron, good morning. Thanks for joining us today. So early this week, the junta announced that General Min Aung Hlaing would become the caretaker prime minister and that fresh elections would be held by August 2020. How significant is this change in designation, and what are the implications of this longer timeline for elections?
I think the important thing to remember is that Min Aung Hlaing has named himself caretaker prime minister. This is a title that he has given himself as the chairman of the State Administrative Council, which is also a title that he gave himself in February when he took power in a coup d'etat. So in terms of the change in designation, he'll continue to have all the same powers he had before. The state newspapers have continued to refer to him as the commander-in-chief of the military, the chairman of the State Administrative Council, and caretaker prime minister. So very few changes in terms of, his powers or how he views his responsibilities. But it does appear to be an attempt on his part to try to legitimize his role and the coup in February. In terms of the longer timeline for elections, I think he genuinely believed when he took power in February that he would be able to sort of tidy everything up within a year and hold fresh elections, which would probably be heavily tilted towards the junta's preferred candidate, and then would elect him president under the current constitution. I think he realizes he can't do that anymore. The resistance has been far greater than he anticipated. And so that's why we now see a longer timeline of 2.5 years.
So more recently, Aaron, ASEAN foreign ministers convened on Monday to discuss the progress of the five-point plan, first announced back in April. But why is it so difficult to appoint a special envoy? And what does it say about ASEAN's actual influence on the junta?
Well, it's interesting. After the ASEAN leaders meeting in Jakarta, which was really extraordinary, it's the only time that ASEAN has held a leaders meeting specifically to discuss one issue, and that was Myanmar. The ASEAN leaders gave the ASEAN chair, which is Brunei this year, the mandate to choose a special envoy. But Brunei didn't seem to really want that role, and as a result, has sought a consensus again among all of the ASEAN countries as to the identity of that envoy. And it's even included Myanmar in those negotiations. And so Myanmar now has a veto over the envoy that is being sent to discuss the situation with it. And that has been one of the main problems in terms of naming an envoy. Myanmar prefers a former Thai permanent secretary of the Ministry for Foreign Affairs, who was also previously an ambassador to Yangon, Wirasakti. And Indonesia and Singapore in particular have opposed that choice. I think they realize that it doesn't look very good for Myanmar to be able to choose its own special envoy to it. And so they have proposed a compromise. They each had their own candidates, Razali Ismail from Malaysia, and then also Hassan Wahyuda, the former foreign minister from Indonesia. And they have proposed a compromise which would see the ASEAN chair really act as a special envoy from year to year. Right now, that's Brunei. Next year, it would be Cambodia. In 2023, it would be Indonesia. But Myanmar has not yet approved that compromise.
And I want to get your perspective about NLD and the status of Aung San Suu Kyi, the leader, and how effective has the shadow national unity government been in getting recognition outside of Myanmar?
They haven't had a lot of success. I don't know of any government that has recognized them as the government of Myanmar. And just to sort of take a step back, this national unity government, it does have some claim to legitimacy because it was formed by National League for Democracy MPs who were elected in the November 2020 elections. And so it has sought to play upon that and use that as leverage to get outside organizations, international organizations, foreign countries to recognize it as a legitimate government. But to date, none has. It does have some sway, particularly in border areas where, for instance, in Sagaing and in Chin State, there are incipient ethnic armed groups that are loyal to the NUG, but it doesn't have a lot of sway within Myanmar, particularly within the center of Myanmar.
And Aaron, meanwhile, protests are still taking place despite a worsening pandemic situation and continued crackdown by the junta. What do we know about the situation on the ground? And do you see this becoming a civil war crisis akin to something like Syria, maybe?
Well, it's extraordinary that Myanmar people are continuing to protest despite the junta having shot and killed 800 protesters over the last 6 months. It really is a testament to the bravery and the determination, the conviction of individual Myanmar people. And we've also seen an uptick. Some of those who oppose the regime are turning from nonviolent protests to more violent forms of opposition. So we've seen an uptick in bombings of junta facilities. Just on Saturday, after Min Aung Hlaing named himself caretaker prime minister, there were 4 explosions in Yangon City. So we are seeing an uptick in violent resistance, but we're not seeing the kind of violent resistance that we saw in Syria in 2011. I don't think that that's particularly likely. One of the key factors in Syria was the intervention of foreign countries and the provision of arms and funding for groups that opposed the government of Bashar al-Assad. And we don't see that happening in Myanmar, at least not yet.
So, Aaron, what does this mean for foreign investments into Myanmar, of course, of which Singapore is one of the largest, if not the largest? Western nations want to put more trade sanctions on the country. China seems to be more lenient to the military junta. How does this all play out over the medium term?
It's going to be very difficult for foreign investors in Myanmar. The United States, the European Union, Canada, and the United Kingdom are all now putting in coordinated sanctions. Really, many of them are targeted sanctions on individuals who are associated with the State Administrative Council, the Bu government. But some of them are directed against military-owned enterprises, particularly those engaged in the gems trade, in the timber trade, which has resulted in a lot of illegal logging and forced labor. And so it's going to be challenging because I think what we've seen in previous cases where these targeted sanctions have been put in place, banks generally don't want to lend to countries with a lot of sanctions risk. So even if you're not a sanctioned individual in Myanmar, a bank is going to think twice about lending money to a project that may engage Myanmar individuals. So it's going to be very difficult, and I think that'll have a lot of negative consequences for development in Myanmar. So ordinary folks, not necessarily engaged in business, will be affected by this as well.
So Aaron, last question. What do you think ASEAN should be doing to address this issue? I mean, could suspending Myanmar be an option from the group?
Well, we at the IISS, my organization, we don't make policy recommendations, but certainly suspension is something that has been discussed. I know a number of prominent Southeast Asian analysts of ASEAN, including Huang Tiha at ICES here in Singapore, Alina Noor of Malaysia, have suggested that suspension is an option. There's nothing in the ASEAN charter that would prevent suspension. It's something that is not addressed in the charter, but it's certainly possible. But it would have to be done at the summit level. And so the opportunity to do that would really be in November. And while there may be some in Indonesia, Singapore, and Malaysia who would be interested in that option, it would almost certainly be blocked by mainland Southeast Asian countries, particularly Thailand. And because ASEAN has chosen to sort of, in a de facto way, recognize the junta as the representative of Myanmar, they would ironically be in a position to block that as well.
Aaron, thanks so much for your insights on this. That was Aaron Connolly, Research Fellow at the International Institute for Strategic Studies in Singapore, talking to us about the situation in Myanmar and really kind of outlining just the impasse that we're in dealing with the crisis.
You know, a few minutes ago, we're talking about ASEAN, right, as an economic bloc, which is coming up. You know, Myanmar is 10% of the ASEAN population, 55 million people. And we tend to forget that Myanmar is run by the military. They've got a lot of privileges there. Aung San Suu Kyi might have come back into the fold a few years ago. But, she operates on the fringes because a lot of the country is still run by the army, right? So, I mean, that, of course, led to her, very publicly around the world, having to no choice but to voice support for the military. Mm. Didn't win her any friends abroad because people thought that she was versus the military junta. Won her a lot of friends back in the country, but it's a mess, right? And we think Malaysia's in a mess. They're in a world off.
Yeah, and this is a question about what is ASEAN's role in supporting or facilitating getting out of that mess. And the challenge I see in hearing from Aaron just now is that there are candidates for the envoy that was meant to apply pressure. But if you're going to rely on Myanmar to have the full veto, I'm worried it becomes a toothless envoy.
That's right.
That's right. And it's something that we'll be keeping an eye on. I think this is something we need to watch closely. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.